The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Thursday, the 28th of March, 2019. On the podcast today, I have Nicholas Bridgen, Chief Executive Officer of Ferro Alloy Resources, FAR. And Nicholas talks about their vanadium operation located in Kazakhstan. If you haven't heard of them, it's probably because it's their first day listed on the main market today. Also on the podcast, I have Chris Bailey, founder of Financial Orbit, talks about the following companies who've reported this week or had news out: Dignity, Debenhams, and Mighty. Also, I have, as always, two lists for you: the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too. By the way, you can see top 10 versions of both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk. We'll see a host of other material content, video, podcasts, all there at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Want to keep up to date with all the companies in your portfolio? On the free Vox Markets app, you can create multiple watch lists and get instant news alerts about any company you follow. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Nicholas Bridgen, Chief Executive Officer of Ferro Alloy Resources. FAR is ticker. Nick, thanks for joining me.
Good morning.
It's a big day for you. First day of listing on the main market there, and so I assume not many people have heard of you yet. That story can change, of course. So before we start and get into a bit more depth and detail about the story, can you just give us a brief overview of what Ferro Alloy Resources is all about, please?
Yes, we have a very large vanadium project. Our operations are in Kazakhstan, and it has various characteristics that I'm sure we'll get into that make it really very, very different from all the other vanadium producers and projects that you will have heard of. We've been working on it for a long time beneath the radar, and now we're ready to get going.
Excellent stuff. Okay, so first day on the main market. So how much are you raising then, Nick?
$7 million.
Okay, and what is that going to be used for?
It's going to be used to expand our existing operation. We have an existing operation based, really, we adapted our former pilot plant and we treat concentrates. And we've found that it's really a very, very nice business and it's capable of making quite a lot of money. So first step is to expand that, and so that it makes a significant contribution to the capital costs of developing the main project. And we will start the main project in parallel, so there's a little bit in that $7 million to do the initial stages of the main project, so we don't lose time.
Excellent, I see. So before we get into what's special and what's different about your project, just for people not aware of where vanadium plays its part, can you explain, you know, vanadium, what is the market, and maybe a little bit about the market, please?
Yes, the vanadium, the unit of measurement is usually vanadium pentoxide, V2O5. Mm-hmm. And it's quite a small market. It's only about 150,000 tonnes a year. It's not publicly quoted on any exchange, but Metal Bulletin and various others do produce indexes. The historic main use is as an alloy of steel. You put sort of 1 or 2 kilograms of vanadium into a ton of steel, and it can double its strength, makes it more corrosion resistant, and keeps its strength in a fire. So it's very popular in construction steel particularly. But it has a lot of other uses as well. And then there's another very interesting use just emerging, which is vanadium redox flow batteries. Mm-hmm. And they are a type of battery that's particularly suited for large-scale grid support where in use with renewables, so that solar energy, for example, can be stored during the day and fed out overnight. The lithium-ion batteries that everyone's heard of are not really suitable for that purpose, and therefore this is a very big growing market where vanadium is the front-running material for this sort of use.
Yeah, yeah. And the price of vanadium has been rising strongly, isn't it, for the last sort of 5-10 years, and it sort of peaked out sort of last year. It's come down a little bit, but what's the reason for this massive rise in this volatility?
Well, there was historically quite a lot of an overhang of stocks mm-hmm. in the system. Nobody really knows where. And vanadium prices had been falling until about the end of the end of 2015. Prices fell to pretty much historic lows. So quite a lot of capacity dropped out of the market. And then when the overhang was used up and construction recovered to its trend level, it wasn't really much of a boom. There was a big shortage, and vanadium is difficult to turn on supply quickly. So it tends to do this. It tends to produce big spikes every 10 years or so, and then fall back to a more normal level. So it went right down to $2.50 or less beginning of 2016. And then because of because it's a relatively small part of the cost of that type of steel, it can go up to $30, which it did. Nobody expects it to stay there, but we do expect it to stay quite strong in the short to medium term, at least, because of all these new uses and the fact that it is increasingly used for steel all over the world. It was formerly just the major developed economies, but now other economies, and particularly China, are starting to specify it. So there's a big strong demand and limited number of good projects on the horizon. We're the only one that I can see which is economic even in a downturn. Some of the others are only economic in boom times. So anyway, we went up to nearly $30.
Yeah,
it's gone down now to just around $14. And I'd expect it in the long term to fall a little bit more, but maybe not much more.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's go into your operation and tell me what's special about your operation there, and explain all about it, please, if you could.
Right. Well, first thing to understand about vanadium is it's quite common in the Earth's crust. Mm-hmm. The difficulty is to find economic concentrations. And most of the world's vanadium comes from a material which has the full name of titanovanadiferous magnetite, and either as a byproduct of making steel or as a primary product. And that's the problem with that material is it's very expensive to produce from it. You need to find really high-grade deposits, and the process, which everybody uses, involves pre-concentrating it to make so that you're handling a smaller amount of material, and then roasting at 1100 degrees or thereabouts, which is very expensive, both in capital costs to bring that power into the project and in operating costs to pay for it. And the recovery is quite low, typically about 75%. So that's a difficult project to bring on stream, given that the vanadium price spends long periods of time in the doldrums and only once every 10 years or so has a real flush like it just has done. So there's been lots of projects like that on the books for a long time that have never been developed. Now, ours is completely different, and this is the important thing about us. Ours is a different type of deposit. We don't have to pre-concentrate. We don't have to roast. We can just directly dissolve the metals in a sulfuric acid at the right temperature and pressure, and away we go. So we have about 40% of the capital costs and about 40% of the operating costs of a typical, or rather of the best of the other type of project, these titanovanadiferous magnetite projects. So and the other thing to be said is we're very big, and we're very, lots of other advantages. We have very low capital costs because of all the major infrastructure we require already exists. So we have a huge operating margin, very low capital costs, and an NPV that others people could only dream of. And it can all be accessed for really a very, very small amount of equity.
Yeah, well, take this. So how much are you hoping to produce? In fact, if you could mention your NPV, good. So, and how much are you hoping to make here?
Well, the NPV of the project at a long-term price of $7.50, remember that's less than, well, it's about half of the current price, mm-hmm. Is $2 billion.
Wow.
And the reason it can be done for not much equity is that we're phasing it. I mentioned earlier that we have this existing operation, mm-hmm. And that's in the grand scheme of things, that's pretty much irrelevant. It's only 5% of the NPV, but it's a very good starter stepping stone. Because it means that we're on the ground, it's not a greenfield site, we have management and we know what we're doing, and it makes enough money to be useful in contributing to the costs of the main project. And the main project we're doing in two stages, we call phase one and phase two. Phase one is about $100 million all up, which is tiny in the way of mining projects generally. Mm-hmm. And some of that will come from the existing earnings from the existing operation. Some will come from a limited amount of equity that we've raised and maybe a little bit more, and debt. And the debt can really be serviced from the existing operation. So we don't have to go down the project finance route. And then phase two, by the time we've got the existing operation and phase one in production, then that more than pays for the cost of expanding it to the third, to phase two, which you might call the third stage. So really, we get going in a very efficient way.
Yeah, yeah. And how long will this rollout take, the phase one, phase two? How long do you expect that to take?
The existing operation will take about a year to come to about 10 times its current capacity. Mm-hmm. But in parallel, so 2 years from today, we'll be working on phase one. That's a two-year project. And then once that's commissioned, we'll immediately start on the expansion to phase two, which is three times bigger than phase one. And that will be another 18 months. We should be able to do it quicker because it'll be just more of the same. So we'll cut out a lot of the testing and detail engineering steps.
Mm-hmm. I see. Excellent stuff. And as far as your background, Nick, what's brought you from, you know, here to where you are today?
Well, a circuitous route. I managed to do a degree in psychology, which is so useless to anything I wanted to do that, of course, I had to do something sensible next. Then I became an accountant. I was with Pete Marwick Mitchell, which is a forerunner of KPMG, mm-hmm. in London. And then I joined Rio Tinto. I spent 14 years with Rio Tinto, learned all about mining. And then I became finance director of a project in Kazakhstan. I should say that I managed to pick up O level, as GCSEs were called in those days, in Russian, and that's what gave me an interest in the region and why I got selected for various things to do with the Soviet Union.
Yeah.
And then, having been finance director of a project in Kazakhstan, which was a great learning curve, I decided to set up on my own. And And we did a gold project, Hambledon Mining, and then and now this. But this, of course, is the real prize. This is a project that you only see the like of once in a lifetime.
Yeah. How long is this operation? What's the life of this mine here?
We've just extended the subsoil use agreement for a further 25 years, which should be enough. But actually, we can extend it after that. The deposit is so big, we haven't finished exploring it, but probably it'll go on for my children's lifetime as well as mine. So it's very big. By the way, I never did say in all our previous conversation what our production targets are.
No.
And that is, phase one will take us to 5,600 tons a year, and phase two, 22,000, plus about 1,500 tons a year from the existing operation. So 23,500 tons per year in all.
Yeah, wow. Well, Nick, you've got you know the area well. You're into mining, finance, and psychology, so you're well set for everything in the financial markets, by the sounds of it. So, one final thing before we get on to the three reasons why someone should add you to their watch list. So, what's your next big milestone you hope to achieve?
As I said, the two things we're most active on now are expanding the existing operation. It's not the main prize, but it's easy and quick. So getting that production up, the milestones will be step by step because we're not going to shut it down. But really, in about a year's time, we should be at our maximum. And there should be some milestones along the way to getting the main phase one of the main project up and running. That obviously we'll be doing. We've already done a feasibility study, but we need to sort out one or two other items that will change on a big scale up from the pilot plant study, and so we'll be making announcements as that goes along.
And current operations are profitable, aren't they?
Yes, we haven't announced our results for last year, but in our quarterlies we've made a useful You know, heading for probably $1 million, $1.5 million. Now that's not anything to brag about. But we deliberately set ourselves the task of proving the concept and then spending the money which we've raised now to expand it up to something 10 times bigger. Mm-hmm. So
excellent stuff. Okay, Nick. Well, one final thing. Every day on the podcast, I highlight the top 5 most followed companies on Vox Market. So, for people listening right now who are not following you, which is obviously not surprising, it's your first day of being listed, give them 3 quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Well, I think the world is moving towards renewables, and that means that the world badly needs vanadium flow batteries. And that means the world badly needs vanadium. And so anyone interested in vanadium, renewables, flow batteries should definitely be following us. And then for the reasons I said, our project is unique. We're not like all the other vanadium producers. And finally, if you want 3, the fact that we're listed, there are very few opportunities to invest in listed companies in the vanadium space.
Marvellous stuff. Nick, good to chat to you. And hopefully we'll catch up again in the not too distant future. Thank you very much.
Okay, nice to talk to you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Chris Bailey, founder of financialorbit.com. You're right, Chris.
Yeah, not too bad. Thanks, not too bad.
You're saying there's not that much news around this week?
Well, it's funny, isn't it? You know, we've got sort of goodness knows what going on in Parliament and the Brexit debate and everything else that rumbles on, you know, regardless of the day and month and year, it seems. But you're right. We're sort of between, you know, we've got distinct earnings seasons in the financial markets. And even though UK stocks, you know, we tend to only report a couple of times formally a year. And then there's a couple of trading updates generally by most companies on top of that. We're at that point where there's fewer companies naturally reporting. Thank goodness it's been a manic last couple of months or so, you know, pacing through all these results. But yeah, not too much out this morning. What did catch my eye was Dignity, the funeral provider, which, you know, should be a fantastic market. And to be honest, has been a fantastic market for many of the participants. They've confirmed that there's a full inquiry into the funeral sector from the Competition and Markets Authority, who basically are worried that funeral providers were overcharging, which, you know, I have to say on my cursory research, that does appear to be reasonably well founded. So Dignity shares are down because clearly there's huge fear that you might see various restraints. And I think actually, to be honest, the internet is doing its job. Very much as we've seen in other areas, the internet's starting to sort of penetrate the funeral provider market. And guess what? As people get more information, they get the ability to buy funeral plans online or to plan their funeral if they wish online. Prices are starting to come down. So not good news for Dignity. That share's been an absolute shocker over the last year or so, and it's down slightly when I last looked this morning.
Yeah, and are people, obviously because of Brexit, people won't be dying, will they? I mean, it's put a halt to everything, Brexit, isn't it?
Well, that's it. I mean, well, yeah, I see the Domino's Pizza CFO correctly got into a bit of trouble by making some comments about some of those related areas in terms of voters dying and things like that, and clearly that is a very crass comment to make, my goodness. But but the reality is, you know, when you look at the Dignity numbers, you know, there's a funny moment in it when you have to sort of do a slight double take when they talk about the death rate. And, you know, clearly it comes to us all, and it's a serious and an important point clearly for anyone involved or family members or related. But yeah, it's for them in a strange way. They clearly are impacted by the fluctuations in the death rate, because clearly it's impacted by external factors, weather, climate, and everything else. But the reality is for them, it's more than superseded by some of these pressures, I think, coming from new internet-based competition. And the fact has, the oxygen of publicity is really impacting the sector negatively now. People are sort of questioning, well, hang on, am I paying too much, etc., which is never a good point. You know, we've seen that in retail. You know, you look at Debenhams. I mean, my goodness, MyCashel is only offering 5p a share and various conditions with that. And you compare that to the Debenhams share price of, you know, even a few months ago, let alone a few years ago.
What is his game, you know, my gosh, how does he ever made? I don't understand how he's made so much money doing what he's doing. I mean, what is his plan here? Because I suppose just to roll them all up into one. Because let's be honest, Debenhams, we talked about this for a long time, saying if it wasn't there now, you wouldn't invent it. You know, because struggling retail, struggling high street, even ASOS online are struggling. And yet, do you know what? There's a play today. I mean, a couple of guys on Twitter are bought into Game Digital because Mike Ashley, sports director, has been up in their stake in that, up to about 29% now. Now, I did look through their sort of balance sheet, and it's not bad. I mean, they're valued at 46 million. They have net current assets of 75 million and net assets of about 96 million. It's not that bad, but their inventory is about 100 million. And I'm just thinking, how fast does games go out of favour? How much discounting will they have to do to shift those games? So there's a bit of worry there, but I suppose it's not. I thought it was going to be a car crash like Debenhams in a balance sheet, but it's not that bad. But I mean, you know, there we go.
Game, I don't know too much about it. I'm not a big gamer or anything like that, but I do observe that obviously it's had its fluctuations over the years. But ultimately, some of those metrics, Justin, I agree that they superficially look somewhat better than the debt-laden balance sheet of Debenhams, which does have, of course, assets and inventories, but it has debt as well. And as we've talked about too many times, debt is the killer. Yeah. It's the big killer of equity value. So, you know, what's Mike Ashley up to? You know, he is a distressed buyer of assets, and we've seen that in things like House of Fraser and other assets over the last few years. But ultimately, he's that weird combination of a savvy businessman on his core business, Sports Direct, where, you know, he worked out that the warehouse pilot high sell it cheap model actually suited that space quite well. Mm-hmm. And obviously he's got great cash flows and has garnered, you know, good credit to him, great wealth from that. And he's sort of using some of that wealth to buy brands or distressed assets where he thinks that he can sprinkle a bit of magic. You know, I think the jury's out on all of that still, to be brutally honest. But all you can say is that at 5p a share, you know, the value in Debenhams is not in sort of the amount of money he's paying for it. It's in, as you say, in things like inventories and other assets and other things that he might be able to do with some of the retail space and related. You know, you look at House of Fraser, and I'm still not quite sure what the plan is there. I mean, I know there's been talk about trying to sort of, you know, make it a bit like a sort of Lily White's, or having flannels and things like that. I think flannels as in the clothes rather than the thing that you wash your face with. But there you go. Who knows? But in the wider scheme of things, from his wealth from Sports Direct, this is, you know, the Debenhams at 5p a share is just a relatively small dent in that. It's not a big, it's a bit like you and me kind of buying not quite a chocolate bar or something, but let's call it a slap-up meal somewhere. It's not going to massively impact our net worth, but obviously it feels quite fun when you're spending the money.
Yeah, exactly. I suppose if you buy, you know, it's like us going to a car boot sale and buying a lot of rubbish, you know, for almost next to nothing and hoping to get a bit of a profit out of it somewhere along the line, you know. You know, economies of scale there. But yeah, I was surprised by Game Digital because, I mean, they did make a profit for 6 months, just shy of 15 million for the last 6 months, but I suppose that's the busy period for them, is it, Christmas time? And it's always very dependent on, I know there's consoles being released, you know, when a big company releases a new console. But now, of course, I don't know if you saw Google come out with Stadia a few weeks back at the Game Developers Conference, where they're hoping to stream. You know, you won't need consoles anymore, which makes sense to me. Why buy this big bit of kit when essentially you can stream it? And I suppose when 5G comes in, there'd be no lag, no latency there. So they just stream really high-end games. Cool.
Yes, that's it. I mean, that's my understanding, that there's some of the technological developments really revolutionised that business. Mm. And, you know, everything is going to the cloud. So, but, you know, you look at the recent Nintendo launches, that was taken quite well by the stock market. Who knows? It's a competitive battle out there. Mm. But obviously, Game hope they continue apace.
Yeah. Marvellous. Cool. Anything else there? What's happening?
I think otherwise, probably a quick word on Mighty, which MITIE, which is certainly people who have been watching the stock market over recent years, probably would conclude it's not Mighty in terms of share price. The shares have halved in the last year and a half or so. And, you know, Mighty, at least, they would say two things. They would say, obviously, Mighty is sort of a company which focuses on outsourcing and related support services activities, which obviously has been an area which has been horrible over the last little while. Not just the Carillions and the Interserves kind of ultimately going out of business or kind of moving into administration. But obviously companies like Capita having huge problems in terms of write-downs and everything. Yeah. Mitie is kind of stuck in the middle there. It's been impacted by a lot of these things. It itself has had grave criticism about accounting treatments and everything else, but it's still surviving. They've got a pretty decent CEO in there now, a guy who's actually well schooled in some of the larger caps. He had a number of senior positions at companies such as Centrica and British Gas. I think a good guy who seems to be putting through a sensible transformation plan. But you look at the numbers today, and you know they admitted that life's still difficult. They admitted the order book was a little bit smaller. And even though they are pushing forward and pushing revenues up, it's clearly still not easy. So shares there, I think when I last looked, down 5 or 6%, and as I say, have halved in the last sort of year and a bit. So it's not been easy. And to be honest, I look at the space and I think to myself, it's not worth bothering. You know, there's at this moment in time, you want to see in this area where there is depressed sentiment and everything else, and clear uncertainty, you want to see a little bit of upward momentum. You want to see companies saying, our order book is growing, we're going to make more money, we're going to generate, you know, more cash prohibitively. And at the moment, you're not seeing that with Mitie. And I think that's the concern today. And in a world where Interserve has just gone to the wall, effectively, Carillion, you know, that's still sort of live in people's memories. And the Capita turnaround plan is still kind of a bit of a dream, to be honest. It's still a very much a work in progress. People aren't going to take that on faith. So no surprises to see Mitie shares down today. And to be honest, I really wouldn't bother.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, at the moment, genuinely, I said, we're in the middle of, you know, sort of storm uncertainty, you know. I don't know if the eye of the storm has passed yet, but I just feel we're lagging. And I've seen a lot of bad numbers come out. In fact, even sort of car production down 15% in the UK in February, you know, which is and that's not the first time that's happened. The last few months have been dire and dreadful. And I think any positive signs we're seeing at the moment, I think, is stockpiling. Because of Brexit, I think people are stockpiling. It's, you know, it's given it's warped sense of you know, positiveness to the economy, I think, you know. And I think once it's all gone, that'll drop off a cliff, all these positive sort of sales, anyone that's stockpiling. So at the moment, you know, people often say the stock market looks in advance. Well, to a certain extent, if you keep your head looking at the macros, and I'm sure you look at macros every day, Chris, and you see some bad figures out there, and the stock market hasn't really fallen off a cliff. And I remember the credit crunch. We were talking about that, you know, about 3-6 months before the stock market actually collapsed, you know. And so there's a pre-warning, many pre-warnings about that. But it's not until it happens do you think, oh, is this a big deal? I think what we're going through now is a bigger deal than we're realizing. And at the moment, like I said, I've got sitting on cash, and I don't want to invest because I just want to make sure this uncertainty passes first before. So I just think at the moment, it's a sit and wait game for lots of people, and the real bad figures haven't been, you know, shown yet, or haven't been sort of, you know, knitted in. I think at the moment the economy will get worse over the next year, you know.
Yeah, it's not easy. And, you know, you look at those parliamentary votes and an inability to kind of conclude anything, it seems. Yeah. And obviously that perpetuates the uncertainty. All I would say is two things. Number one is consumers are obviously a good chunk. Consumption is 2/3 of the UK economy. And I would say, at least at this moment in time, I'm still seeing some all right numbers there in terms of wage growth and related. Now, clearly, people's propensity to spend money, and as you said, things like car sales or car production has been poor. Car sales have been patchy too. We know the housing market's under pressure. You know, there are issues and constraints out there, but there's also low expectations. And even though certainly some companies have been helped by a bit of stockpiling, you know, there is still, I would say, generally a very low expectation for the UK economy and hence UK market. Certainly on an international basis, UK market, particularly domestic stocks, looks good value, looks cheap, you know, or to put it another way, things like dividend yields, which are still being broadly covered in most senses by cash flow and stuff, look pretty attractive. So it's as always, stock market is multiple shades of grey. It's never easy. You kind of see things in hindsight much easier than you do in reality. All I would say is keep your sort of fundamental filters there. You know, make sure you understand what you're investing in. Keep thinking, keep reading. That's the key. And ideally, stuff from companies is really good, and probably a little less of the macro stuff, which can be, you know, excitable and sometimes a little bit misleading.
Yeah, well, I hope we're not going over a cliff, but part of me thinks we are. I don't know why. I just think, you know, again, end of cycle, we've got all these worries coming up and all these people withholding investment because of uncertainty, and that has real-world impact, you know. And, yeah, so I'm just a bit bearish at the moment. And of course, it's perception at the moment. I've seen a lot of bad figures every morning, but it's perception at the moment. But I just think, if in doubt, stay out. I understand with dividend-paying stocks like that, if you're a long-term holder, there's no point just selling those because you're getting compound interest if you're reinvesting. I'm just thinking, don't take big risky plays right now. You know, we're in the, yeah, in the middle of the market. You know, it's not in the middle. We're towards the top of the market, really, and we're getting a cloudier, gloomier outlook, you know, which is a bit worrying at the moment. So it's a sit and wait. I say I'm in cash, not because I'm gloomy, it's because I want to have cash to take advantage of when there is a bit of a sell-off, you know, and that's it.
And also when perhaps you get new information. And, you know, we've talked about the fact that there's a relative dearth of company data out today. That won't be the case. Push it forward a little while. We'll be in a deluge again. New information, new insights, as always in this world, when the facts change, you change your mind, and you know, positively or negatively, and that's how it should be. So that's certainly, I think, the big learning for all investors is wait for it to come to you rather than trying to force something.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. Thanks for that, Chris, and we'll catch up next week, fella.
Sounds a plan. See you then.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Macanga Resources, MKA. At four, Diversified Gas and Oil. I always say that the wrong way around. And I always think of that because they went to come to the market as Diversified Oil and Gas, but they realized the ticker may be dog. So they went with Diversified Gas and Oil, which is DCO, no, so DGOC. Very confusing. At three, it's Haydale Graphene Industries. That's HAYD. At two, it's Debenhams, DEB. And number one, most followed companies, Game Digital. In fact, we did talk about those two companies on the podcast there with Chris. And I know Game there is getting followed because what's his name? Mike Ashley from Sports Director has been up in his holding of that company. And so there's rumours of a takeover, of course. Okay, top five. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but it may do. Top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, Hurricane Energy, that's HUR. At four, T3 feasibility study confirms high margin, low capital, open pit copper mine. I assume that's Metal Tiger. They never ever, well, they did last time, I think, put their name on an RNS. At three, Macango. And Macango announces receipt of $7 million from Telaxis. And, well, they're down on that. Really odd. Telaxis, So, what's the market cap of Macango? Let's have a look here. 8 million or 9 million. Huh. That's the market today. The market's dreadful at the moment. At two, Infrastrata. Issuance of contractual fee shares and total voting rights. At 0.7 at the moment. Wow. And number one, most liked RNS came from Europa Metals. Change in Spanish legislation, re-mining land use, and this, of course, it's good for them because they've got zinc, lead, copper sort of mine out there, or operation, exploring at the moment, of course. They're hoping to turn it into a mine, and that works in their favour on a regulatory point of view. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.